Good afternoon and welcome to the panel, RNZ National. Wallace Chapman with you today. Lovely to be with you on a Friday afternoon. Well, as you may well know, actor and comedian David McPhail has died, aged 76. In the late 70s and early 80s, series such as A Week of It, McPhail and Gadsby and Issues took political satire to a new level in Aotearoa, and later shows such as Seven Periods with Mr. Gormsby, where McPhail played a cantankerous teacher. Here's a snippet of the show McPhail and Gadsby, where David McPhail plays Rob Muldoon, appearing on This Is Your Life.
You've had many opponents in your career. Who would you rate as the toughest?
Malcolm Fraser, yes, he's as cunning as a dingo, yeah, whatever that jury said.
Well, Malcolm's got a bad back.
Bad back, you can see his front, eh, Tim?
So the only one with enough spare time to get along here was your old arch enemy, Bill Rowling.
New Zealand.
Oh, there he is again, old number 281.
No, we've got a new natty slogan now.
Oh, yeah.
Out the door in 84. No, that's not right. I must have a word to Simon Walker.
Don't mention that Polly's name here, mate.
Well, sling the weight in 88. Oh,
no. We take you back to 1980.
The man I have chosen for this difficult and sensitive task is a man of integrity and uncompromising honesty.
Do you remember who you said that about?
I don't know anyone I'd say that about.
Well, here he is now. A big hand, please, for Mr. Justice Mann.
Yes, that is McPhail and Gadsby there, and the Rob Muldoon character that David McPhail played with us to discuss. It's cartoonist and writer Tom Scott, who knew David well. Tom, kia ora, welcome to the panel.
Yes, sad day. Yeah.
A pioneer in New Zealand satire, said New Zealand on screen. A fair assessment?
Totally, yeah. I can hear something playing in the background there.
Oh, no, can you hear us, Tom?
I could keep hearing the previous sketch going, still going in my ear.
Oh, really? Yeah. Can you... Are you loud and clear now?
Yeah, I am. Yep.
So, You knew David, and you worked with him on Seven Periods with Mr. Gormsby as co-creator. Is that right, Tom?
Well, it was created by it's a bit, but there's a kind of reverb.
Tom. I think what's happening is that you may well have your radio on, and that's okay. what sends the loop. So you just go back and sort the radio, and I'll jump to Eli, who is a comedian here. What did David McPhail mean to you as a budding comedian?
He's an icon to me growing up, because I grew up in Christchurch, so he was working at the Court Theatre the whole time I was doing theatre studies at the Court, and then I joined the Court Jesters when I was 18. And I remember seeing the McPhail and Gadsby live show at the Court Theatre, and yeah, just incredible, some of the biggest laughs I've ever heard in the room when those two were together. And he used to work at Merivale Mall as well, and we always got very starstruck when he came in to buy a DVD.
And it was his satire, the ability to capture people and capture character, right? Because I can recall growing up with a Rob Muldoon character, and I was fixated and fascinated by just how well he captured him.
Yeah, and I think that sort of thing actually gets people interested and engaged in politics as well. I think when we have good satire, it makes you want to know more about politics so you can get the jokes, and I think that we really were peaking when he was doing his Robert Muldoon impression.
Yeah. Nikki, can you recall McPhail and Gadsby
I remember McPhail and Gadsby from when I was a kid, yeah, and thinking, and that was just so funny, right? It was super funny, that impression that he did of Muldoon. And we just don't really have anything. Do we have anything like that now?
Not so much. And I do believe that Tom Scott is with us now. Tom, are you with us now?
I am, quite clear.
Wonderful. Yeah. Wonderful. Yeah, no, don't worry. That reverb thing, that's really happened to me before, and I wasn't quite sure why I was sounding the way I was. But just picking up on Eli is a comedian here who said he was deeply influenced by Dave McPhail. But just back to that, he was a true pioneer in both satire and comedy, wasn't he?
He certainly was. And he was also a superb person. He was the most courteous person I think I've ever met. He was incredibly kind and patient and solicitous. He was a really decent man, the most important thing. I think he was a great dad and a great husband here.
The first thing I think of also as someone, Tom, who lived in the years of Muldoon, and we're just talking about it, is just how well David captured not just Muldoon, but the political spirit of that time, Tom.
He did. He was irreverent, and it was quite brave because Muldoon didn't like any of that sort of stuff. And to take on Muldoon took a bit of courage, and he did it very, very well. In fact, it wasn't until David Long followed David McPhail that Muldoon had someone in Parliament who was able to mock him as well. So, and Muldoon hated being mocked. He hated being teased, and David teased him mercilessly. So, it was wonderful to watch. Yeah, great stuff. Yeah.
What do you think his legacy to New Zealand satire, to New Zealand comedy, will be, David? I mean, Tom.
Well, he's only second only to John Clark. If you have the pantheon of Billy T.J. and John Clark and Jeanette McDonald, and David's up with them. Also, he was a wonderful... I saw him on stage. He was electrifying on stage. I saw him on Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf at the Auckland Theatre Company. Danny and I were trying to think of someone to play Gormsby, this irascible, fearless teacher. Danny said, I think David McPhail would be good, and I wasn't entirely convinced. I thought David would be a bit soft. But we went along to the Auckland Theatre Company and we sat in the back of the theatre and he was spellbinding. He was able to do... He was so tough. He was as good as Richard Burton was in the film version. Mm. And I said to Danny, you're dead right. This man could play Gormsby, and he was. He was fantastic. And the teenage boys who acted with him adored him, and he was fantastic. And he had the right level of authority and power that the part required. And I've had phone calls today from people in Australia who've heard about David's death, and they've been ringing me up to say, Mr. Gormsby's gone. So, yeah, he was just fantastic. Well, I showed David the first couple of episodes of Gormsby at my house in Wellington.
Yeah.
He came up and he sat and watched me. He sat there looking without a word. Finally, when it was finished, he turned to me and said, tears in his eyes, and said, that's my finest performance. But it wasn't. His finest performances were on stage. He was a wonderful stage actor, absolutely wonderful.
Thomas.
And Letters to Blanchy was terrific as well. It was a fantastic show.
Letters to Blanchy, yes, yes, indeed. Hey, Tom, thanks for being on the panel. I really appreciate it.
That is
cartoonist and writer Tom Scott, who co-created Seven Periods with Mr. Gormsby. But certainly the end of an era, eh? That style of comedy and satire.
Yeah, it makes me want to go back and actually have a look at some of that. Yeah. I've never seen Gormsby.
NZ On Screen is a good place to go. Big response to noise. And noise complaints. We might have to come back to the talking about noise control. It's the bane of my life. I run a PA sound hire business, and sometimes one person can stop the enjoyment of hundreds. It's such a weird law, and often they ask if we can just turn down the bass. I just look at them and say, sorry, it's all about the bass.
it's actually interesting. I've been following in the Herald. There's a story about a Waiheke vineyard who's been having an ongoing court case about a noise issue.
Big story,
well.
That one. Yeah. 19-5, the panel, RNZ National. Well, in a surprise move today, New Zealand Rugby and provincial unions have been presented with an alternative capital-raising option that the Players Association, Rugby Players Association, believes is far better than this proposed Silver Lake deal. New Zealand investment company Forsyth Barr has suggested the sale of 5% stake in New Zealand Rugby's revenue-generating assets through an NZX-listed entity to the New Zealand Public and Institutions, NZ Inc. IPO. Now, Forsyth Barr and the Players Association, NZRPA, believe the valuation of New Zealand Rugby's commercial rights is between 3.4 and 3.8 billion, 12 to 23% higher than the Silver Lake valuation. So to discuss this big move today is presenter and broadcaster Scotty Stevenson at Spark Sports. Scotty, welcome to the panel.
No, thank you, Wallace. And what a sad news about David McPhail. I've been listening into Tom Scott just a couple of days ago in Auckland, actually, and it was lovely to hear him talk about his friend and colleague as well. But Yes, New Zealand rugby are embroiled, aren't they, in a battle here.
Yeah.
A battle for hearts and minds, actually. And you know, we're all starstruck by the numbers, aren't we? The valuation, so to speak, of New Zealand's great rugby brands, the All Blacks, etc.
Yeah.
This is so much more about money. This is about control of the game. And this is about business interests. And it's amazing to me, Wallace, all through this process, how the New Zealand Rugby Players Association has been pitched to the media by New Zealand Rugby, ostensibly the employers of the players. The chairman of New Zealand Rugby, Brent Impey, is no stranger to unions. Of course, he was an advisor of the Ports of Auckland. In fact, there was a great story 8 years ago where the Ports of Auckland were embroiled in some controversy about the way they had pitched stories about the union then, where there was allegations that they had dropped stories to right-wing bloggers to make the union look like the greedy player in the battle here. And there is no difference, in my opinion, to what has happened here with the New Zealand Rugby Players Association, who have been the singular voice against the Silver Lake deal. When you consider that the 26 provincial unions, the constituent members of New Zealand Rugby Incorporated, voted unanimously at the AGM to approve the Silver Lake deal, to approve the progress of the Silver Lake deal, per se, and the Rugby Players Association have said, let's just take a pause and ask ourselves, is this the right thing to be doing for the game?
Well, this is really, I mean, it's quite an extraordinary thing to happen today. So what does this mean? Would this mean that New Zealand rugby remains firmly in the control of New Zealanders? And, Scotty, would it mean that, as a New Zealander, you might have the opportunity to invest some money in New Zealand rugby?
Well, this story came out today at lunchtime. The New Zealand Rugby Players Association dropped the story to the media at lunchtime, and may well have dropped it to other media earlier in order to set up these stories. They've gone to Forsyth Barr and said, well, you know, this is the Silver Lake deal that everyone has been, that has been proposed to the unions and to rugby and to the public by New Zealand Rugby. We're opposed to it on various grounds, and those have been well documented over the last few weeks. And they said, well, here's an alternative. We wonder if New Zealanders could fund this through an IPO in New Zealand, so sell a stake of New Zealand rugby to New Zealanders. According to my sources today, Forsyth Barr have been inundated by people calling up and saying, is this a possibility? Can we invest in the All Black brand? Now, if you were saying to me that the All Black brand is a popular brand, that New Zealanders believe wholeheartedly in the All Blacks as this lovely, holistic, culturally important brand of a sporting team in this nation, then, again, according to my sources, Forsyth Barr have been met with a wonderfully positive
response. I'm going to put it out to the listeners across the country. Would you, given the chance, would you like to invest in the All Blacks? Would you like to invest in New Zealand rugby? Let's go to comedian Eli Matthewson first. Eli?
Yeah, I'd love to invest. And how much money would you have to invest to get to play one game? I've not played rugby before, but I reckon I could give it a bash.
Oh, Eli.
Hey, I've got an idea. I just had this brilliant idea. Why doesn't New Zealand rugby start a KiwiSaver fund? Right? Yeah. We've just been talking about that. People can put their KiwiSaver from their default fund instead into the rugby fund.
Oh, the brilliance.
Kiwis would love it.
Hey, Scotty, just finally then, so what do you anticipate happening in the next week?
Oh, I think there's a lot of water to go under the bridge. Look, New Zealand Rugby are convinced that the Silver Lake deal is where they need to go. I mean, they've been consulting with McKinsey & Co. We know a global consulting firm. They've been consulting for some time. They've never really been transparent about how much money they've spent on consulting via McKinsey to get to this point, but this is the point they've got to. They've said, we need this capability, we need this investment, we need this capital injection in our game. The Rugby Players Association are arguing, well, you know, if you don't have the capability now, why are you sitting around the boardroom table? Why should we sell 12.5% of the revenues of our national sporting body, commercial revenues that is, to a foreign investment firm, a venture capital firm, and when we can do this by listing publicly here in New Zealand.
All right, fine. Scotty, just letting you know that huge response here, and it's basically 99% yes. Yes, 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 yes. Love to invest.
There you go.
All right. Scotty Stevenson, Spark Sport, a presenter and broadcaster. Someone says, invest in New Zealand rugby. You bet. Keep foreign hands off our game. It's 13 to 5, the panel, RNZ National. Now, an estimated 400,000 cars are without current warrants of fitness, which only serves to make New Zealand roads even more dangerous for users. As a result of financial hardship caused by the pandemic, low-income families are struggling to cover vehicle-related costs, and warrant of fitness rates have slipped because of this. Rise, Andrew Slies for Driven. With us is Greg Epps. He is the New Zealand's Motor Transport Association Advocacy and Strategy Manager. Greg, kia ora.
Hi, Wallace. How are you?
Good. 400,000 cars are without current warrants of fitness. That sounds like a pretty tall number to me.
Yeah, and I mean, to be fair, maybe not all of them are on the road, but I mean, a good chunk of those will be on the road. Some of those are going to be motorbikes or caravans that have been laid up for the winter or not used in the holidays and the WAF has lapsed. But you know, they could be out there. We know that from the WAF exemption that took place last year, you know, when people had an extended period to get their warrant, there's still over 200,000 vehicles from that period that still need to be complied. And so, you know, we heard earlier this week about the grants being paid out for people to get repairs, and we're really keen to see people supported in getting their vehicles inspected and repaired.
Let's jump into our panel for this. Nikki, what do you reckon?
Funnily enough, I just took my car for its warrant today.
Congratulations.
Yeah, and also, funnily enough, you know, I did try and postpone that that warrant visit.
And why?
Because I thought I might need to defer that cost a little bit, like just pop it out a week. I tried to postpone it, but as it turns out, my warrant was due today, so I had to suck it up and pay for it today. But it's a cost that you kind of...
You defer?
Yeah, I mean, if you can. And you know, when, as in this story, when the it's something that you don't, it's not immediate, you don't have to pay it to have something happen. You know, you could take the risk of driving without a warrant and take the risk of getting
hearing
a ticket
that,
or whatever. For families who are under pressure financially, I think that's a really, really good point.
Greg?
Yeah, and I mean, like, we understand. It's like going to the dentist or the doctor. You sort of hold off because you don't want to hear if there's a problem. But you know what? If you look after yourself, look after your car, and go in regularly for an inspection to see if you can see what might be a problem in the coming future, you can prepare for it. Because oftentimes, the warrant of fitness inspectors, the things that go are tyres and brakes and things like that. And so the warrant of fitness inspector will look at that and he'll be able to say to you, hey, look, your tyres are okay now, but you're going to want to have a look at them in maybe a month, 2 months down the track. And that gives you time to sort of prepare for it and think, right, I'll have to just put away a little bit so that I can do that expense when it comes due.
Eli, do you have a car?
Yeah, I have a car, and it currently doesn't have its warrant. I went for the test last week, and I've got a month. You have a month, right? Once you've got the little form, you can keep driving it around?
Greg?
No, you can't keep driving it around.
Okay, that's good to know. That's good to know.
Eli?
So you can go and get it repaired.
I'll sort that out then.
Sprung.
Yeah.
On the radio.
Hey, now, you are calling, Greg, or the association is calling for continued support for people to get their warrant of fitness completed. Is that right? You're looking for some type of government grant?
Well, yeah, we know that people are able to apply to MSD for that. Now, that's generally going to be the MSD clients, you know, that. But we want to see if there can be a more specific program that recognises that vehicle safety is really important. You know, the warrant of fitness failure rate has been going up in the past few years, and we're concerned that it's not just financial, but people don't understand their vehicles and they're not sure. And so we want people to be bringing those cars in and getting them inspected properly. Now, if the barrier is financial, and it's important to the government to you know, head that road to zero and get the road toll down. Mm. You know, it's really important for us to be inspecting those vehicles.
Good to have you on. Thank you, Greg. That is Greg Epps there, New Zealand's Motor Transport Association Advocacy and Strategy Manager. But you are going to get your what needs fixing, Eli?
It's like, it's little things. It's like cleaning the inside of the lights or something. It's okay. Something I could probably do myself, but I don't understand how cars work and I refuse to learn.
All right.
Yeah, we don't need to know, eh?
No. Obviously a subject of national significance because there's been quite a volume of people saying regarding would or would you not invest in New Zealand rugby if you have the chance to keep it a national sport or a New Zealand game. I'm Ingrid says in Gisborne, I am not a rugby fan, but I would be prepared to invest in the All Blacks to keep American hands off our national sport. Another one, Sue in Southland says, heck yes, sign me up. The All Blacks would be a gold card icon for investment, says someone. And regarding noise, a lot of people really relate to the noise. As Malcolm says, any self-proclaimed sound engineer who thinks it's all about the bass is either deaf or hasn't bothered to listen without earplugs or headphones. As a musician and someone who has mixed for bands, I can assure him that not being able to hear instruments operating above a few tens of hertz makes attending a concert a waste of money. Jeanette says the Dunedin situation sounds very similar to the Eden Park and Western Springs objectors. And do we hear Wellington City dwellers complaining? No. Dunedin moaners can move away if they don't like it. Do you have any complaints about your gigs, Eli, when you shout and sort of carry on stage?
How loud? I mean, yeah, the laughs are just booming and the whole neighbourhood saying, shut up, but the audience is just like, it's too funny. No, I've never had a noise complaint for a comedy show. It's just talking for me. And this was about folk music as well. So
it did seem quite surprising that it was folk music, not like even metal or something really raucous.
No.
And
yeah, it's a nice little cafe. It's not like it's, a rock venue.
It's a free concert for you.
Fran in Dunedin says, around 5 years ago, my young neighbours were reported to noise control by a neighbour. A real shame as they had their music gear confiscated. Really mean. As they only turned the sound up now and then. This was Dunedin City. I'm an old girl. We were all young ones. Still love music and enjoy young people. Get a life, you silly complainers. Or a pair of earplugs, says Fran. Well, that's a bit harsh, isn't it?
Well, yes and no. I mean, I think there's got to be give and take in these situations. You know, if you live in an area where there are venues, then, you know, you need to be prepared to compromise a bit.
Yeah, I was living near Western Springs and I thought it was awesome. I could hear AC/DC like crystal clear when they played just from my house. I was like, this is a bonus, not a... but obviously, some people don't like AC/DC, I guess.
All right, finally on the program, to the issue of skinny jeans now, which according to Gen Z are no longer cool. What are you laughing about,
I love Nikki? This topic. I'm so glad we're doing this today.
Well, instead, young people, Nikki, they are opting for high-waisted jeans, flares and the popular mum jean.
I think this is so funny.
Now, the mum jean...
It's a mom jean.
It's a mom jean. It's a wide-legged 90s-style jean. And the term appears to have originated from a Saturday Night Live sketch in 2003 in which comedians wore boxy jeans in a voiceover declaring, I'm not a woman anymore, I'm a mum. A Washington Post columnist, Jill Neal, wrote in 2006 that mum jeans flatter almost no one. However, a New York school recently told the Post that mum jeans look good on everyone and you don't have to struggle to put them on. So I don't know, round the panel, Nikki, I have noticed with my kind of... putting my trend eye on, that less and less people are wearing the said skinny jean and more people are wearing these boxy...
Yeah, the wide-leg, high-waisted jean. I think this is so funny because I see all these young girls walking around in these jeans as well, thinking that every generation thinks they've invented something, right? So these girls are wearing the high-waisted jeans with the little crop tops, which is exactly what me and my friends were getting around in the early 90s. Exactly the same.
Oh,
outfit.
Really? So it's come around.
Of course. And
so skinny jeans weren't the
90s then? No, God, no. Not till the aughts. But the wide jeans that we were wearing in the 90s were, of course, a throwback to the jeans of the 70s. So nothing is new here. This is just things cycling around in fashion. Personally, I've never been a big fan of the skinny jeans. I have worn them, but I think I'm a high waist and a wide leg, I think, is more flattering and comfortable on most people.
But the skinny jean, I thought, was just so ubiquitous and such a permanent fixture of fashion.
It was for a long time, for a decade, really.
For a whole 10 years.
Yeah.
Eli.
It really stuck in wild, didn't it? It was when I was seventh form at high school, that was the big... All the boys bought... We went to Glassons, we all bought women's jeans, and then you'd hot wash them.
Whoa.
So that they were, and then dry them so they really clung to your leg. And to be honest, I'm really glad to be on the other side of that.
How long did it take you to put them on?
Exactly, it's an adventure. And then to get them off, oof, that is not... you're not in the mood anymore by the time they're off.
God, I don't like a skinny jean on a man, to be honest.
Why not?
I don't think they look very good on men. I just think I don't need to see that much detail of your legs.
Yeah, there's, right.
I'd say the new mum jean is the skinny jean, because when I think of an iconic mum look at the moment, I think it's skinny jeans and a puffer jacket on the side of the netball court.
Yeah,
in
and a
loose
fitting
Park.
Top.
Yeah.
And a sneaker. You're right.
We've solved that one. We actually didn't ask you, so you're not a skinny jean person, Eli?
No, I'm wide leg all the way.
Okay. Nikki Bazan, Eli Mathewson, thank you very much. Have a great Friday. Eli still has one show that's not sold out, so do go along. Is that right, Eli?
Tomorrow night.
Good on you.
Theater.
And speaking of Dunedin, speaking of noise control, turn this up loud. It saved my life. Bye-bye. See ya.